Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 47, recorded January 31st, 2011.
Welcome, everyone.
Greetings.
Okay, before we go any further, we do have a presence on Facebook, so just go to Aquarimax on Facebook and like us.
Yay!
Or
because you already like
our podcast from there.
Make it official.
You can become a friend of Aquarimax, you know, something like that. That would be great. We do have a following building up, but your help would be appreciated in getting that going. We also have the same thing on Twitter, so...
which we're figuring out how to use.
Yeah, but I can tweet. Is
tweet?
That what it's called? Yeah, I can tweet on it now. So, and I've been doing that, so check that out. And as those of you who already do follow us on one or the other of those, we have some YouTube videos up. We have a new YouTube channel. So you can just go to Aquarimax on YouTube, or you can go to our homepage at aquarimax.com, and there's a link there on the sidebar to go to... all of those places I just mentioned. We've got a couple of videos up of our rainbow fish and a 55-gallon tank. One of the adults in courtship behavior, one of the adults and Fry eating grindleworms, and I'm just about to put up another video that doesn't relate to rainbow fish at all. I'm not going to tell you what it is. So
it's
that
just tough to wait.
Yeah, that's suspense. Coming up pretty soon. So.
So, and if you have your own YouTube account, then you can subscribe to us, and it will tell you when we put up something new.
Yeah, we had a couple people subscribe today, so that's kind of cool. Thank you.
So, welcome.
To those of you who did, and maybe you're our listeners, maybe not. I didn't really check that. I should have, but at any rate, thank you for subscribing, whoever did. So, let's get started with the rest of the show.
Okay, we have an email from Brian.
Who has emailed us various times before.
Thank you, Brian.
Yes, we're glad that he's a faithful listener and contributor. And he has some interesting things to say about a bacterial product he's been using. It's called Microbacter 7. And also about another product, nitrate and phosphate reducing biopellets. So these are really kind of interesting things. They have applications in both freshwater and saltwater. The idea is that carbon is a limiting factor in most aquaria. So,
okay.
In other words...
What does it limit?
It limits growth of things, including bacteria, especially bacteria. Bacteria can use elemental carbon.
Healthy bacteria, bad bacteria, all of the above?
Well, all bacteria need carbon, you know. We're all carbon-based life forms here, pretty much. But that you can have beneficial bacteria that need a lot of carbon, and if you get them, they can outcompete things like algae that you don't want. Things like that.
Okay.
And so people, especially in reef tanks, will add things like, and I'm paraphrasing things that Brian mentioned in his email, things like vodka. You know, the alcohol has carbon molecules in it that they'll use.
Does it have a particularly high, you know, higher than something else that they'd use vodka?
Or
do they just think it's funny?
No, it has a fairly high carbon content. So does sucrose. You know, sugars are basically just carbon that plants have zipped together, carbon and other molecules. They're not just carbon, but they're mostly carbon that have been zipped together, and alcohols are, you know, a byproduct of sugars, bacterial action on sugars, and so they're all just full of carbon. And other things like vinegar. Vinegar and alcohol are chemically very closely related.
Interesting.
So they're all just carbon with a few other molecules added on and strung together in certain ways. So, the idea is that if you do that, the bacteria reproduce quickly, use up this carbon, the algae can't get to it, and they also use things like, you know, other products in the water that you don't want there, byproducts of fish metabolism and so on. And then sometimes the problem is, he says that the tanks can develop thick bacterial mats.
Like... that you can actually see?
Yeah,
it's not like
you can
microscopic
see them.
And
you can get them out, but, well, the bacteria,
bacteria
are microscopic.
What does a bacterial mat look like?
But, well, the scum that forms on the inside of an aquarium tube or on the outside of a bio wheel or something, that's a bacterial mat.
Interesting.
But, so you can see it because there are just, you know, untold billions of the bacteria there.
So if fish had feet, they could wipe their feet on the bacterial mat before they came into somebody else's tank. Sorry.
Okay. I had to groan at that one. But the idea is that in a tank with a protein skimmer, you can skim a lot of those bacteria off. And then all those nutrients that you don't want are out of your system, and bacteria and algae can't get to them, so you don't have the algae problems. Kind of a cool idea. But there can be, you know, certain problems with that. So,
what are the problems?
Well, like the bacterial mats. You don't want to
dig those out of your aquarium. Have a protein skimmer.
And even if you do, I mean, you can skim the ones that are out of the water column, but if they land on a surface and they populate a substrate, then they're there. So you have to go scrub them out manually or something, or vacuum them out or something. So there are problems with it. He said that there's these biopellets, these nitrate phosphate reducing biopellets. And I guess what they are, he says they're a plastic material, but bacteria live on the surface of it and they eat it.
They eat the plastic?
Yeah, they eat the plastic, but you put them in a media reactor, which is basically a little chamber, right? Okay. That you can. There are various different media that you put in these chambers that you can put like calcium substrates in there to make sure calcium is slowly added to the water, and you put some carbon dioxide in there, which causes the stuff to go into solution. It dissolves it in the acid of the carbon dioxide, and so you get calcium dosing that way and things like that. Media reactor, that's one thing you can do with a media reactor. But another thing you can do with a media reactor is apparently put these biopellets in it, and they tumble in there. You keep water flow, so that they tumble around, and as they do, bacteria that live on them are eating it, eating the plastic, and pulling nutrients from the water. But as they do that, the biofilm, or the bacterial mats that form on the outside of these pellets, are knocked off. And then the bacteria go floating out. Because it's tumbling.
Okay.
The bacteria go floating out into the water column. Your coral can eat it.
Okay.
You know, it's a good food source for coral. But also, the excess can be removed by a protein skimmer. So that's one way how those work. So that's kind of an interesting idea.
Does this have application in a freshwater tank?
Well, those maybe not so much. I mean, I don't know, the biopellets maybe. The protein skimmer, no. Because
you can't use protein skimmer
in freshwater because the water's not viscous enough to form the bubbles. And the right kind of bubbles and the foam. Mm-hmm. So it just doesn't work. But, excuse me. But he said that there's this company, Brightwell Aquatics, which, okay, here's the big famous, big fat disclaimer. I'm not getting any money from Brightwell Aquatics to mention them. Okay, and they have a website, brightwellaquatics.com. They came out with a substance, a bacterial additive. It's called Microbacter 7. And Brian says he heard a lot of good things about it, and that the company is a good company that produces a lot of good stuff. And he said, you add the planktonic bacteria, that's what the Microbacter 7 is, you're actually adding the bacteria themselves to the system, and they start reproducing like mad, you know, exponential growth and whatnot, and then you skim them out. So you leave them in there for just a few hours. It says 4 hours is the recommended time, and then that's enough so that they reproduce like crazy, and then you skim them out with your skimmer.
And this is all just so that it outcompetes algae.
Well, it's taking all these excess nutrients in your system that you don't want out, that algae would get to if they could, but they can't. So yes, basically.
And this one, is this Microbacter?
Microbacter 7.
Is that just for reef tanks too, or?
He says you can use it in freshwater. And he says he does.
How do you skim it out then?
You can't skim it out. Removing it is not as easy. He said. He said you just let the time go and then you do a water change. And it does kind of the same thing. And he said he used to clean the front glass every other day before he started using it. He said in the first week he only had to start cleaning it once a week or maybe twice. And he's also increasing the amount he's feeding, but he's having to do less cleaning because the bacteria are doing a lot of the work for him. So that's kind of cool.
That's nice.
And he's thinking he might try the media reactor in a freshwater tank and then have the bacteria, he'd put the media reactor on the intake side of the canister filter, and then the bacteria would be trapped by the filter media in the canister filter. So even though he can't use a skimmer, he'd still be taking the bacteria out. And he said you could put the output of a reactor near a hang on the back filter, and that might work too. Or you could take a water polisher. Do it yourself, a water polisher with a pump, and a tap water filter canister, and then a micron filter. Whoa. That's pretty cool. You could do some interesting things with that.
Those are some interesting ideas.
Yeah. It's interesting how salt water can inform freshwater, too. We haven't done much with salt water, although We're having a guest coming soon who's going to be talking a little bit about saltwater stuff.
He'll be very excited.
Yeah, he's cool. And he's going to be on the show. And so as soon as he gets back from overseas, which is soon, he should be... Actually, he got back a couple days ago, so I better email him. And we can set up maybe for next week. He'll be our guest. Anyway, so thank you, Ryan, for that great information. Hopefully that gets you all started either to look up Microbacter 7 and look into this whole idea of how these bacterial additives can help you out, or maybe look into some reef tank applications if you haven't already done that. So, interesting stuff. Now let's go to our next contributor for the day, shall we? Oh, no, you're right. Kelly just pointed at something. Brian also asked about aquascaping, and I think that's a great topic, but it'll have to wait for another...
Because that's its own topic.
Yeah, we could do several podcasts just on aquascaping. Not that
maybe
I'm... Not that I'm an expert on aquascaping exactly, but...
I think you do lovely aquascaping.
Oh, thank you. But anyway, we'll get to that. That's a great topic, so we'll get to it, but eventually, when we can. Now we're going to talk about our next guest. Or contributor, not guest.
Dave.
Yes, Dave.
Dave sent
us. Do you want to
email.
Read his
sure.
intro there?
Says, I am relatively new to tropical fish keeping. I have set up several aquariums and am getting into some breeding. I have tried aquariums both with and without substrate and can see some advantages in each. If you haven't already covered this topic, which we haven't, in a previous show, I would be interested in your experience.
Okay.
So, substrate.
Dun dun dun.
Flooring for fish.
Yeah, something like that.
Flooring is important.
It is.
Sets the whole tone of your room or your tank.
Or your tank, I guess it sort of does.
You gotta keep your feet and your fins happy.
Although the fish don't spend much of the time with their fins on. Well, it depends on the fish. Some do. Corydoras do, and other, you know, bottom-dwelling fish, I guess. But, excuse me.
Tell us some advantages of substrate.
Yeah, we'll talk about advantages and disadvantages of substrate in general, some that I've noticed. Well, the advantages are it generally looks better if you have substrate in the tank. A bare-bottom tank...
looks naked.
It looks sort of naked. The reflection of the glass is not very flattering to the fish, typically. It sort of washes them out a little bit. And it sometimes stresses certain fish out to have that... you know, the bottom staring back up at them, I think. They're more likely to see reflections coming from underneath them that might bother them and so on. And that can be overcome. I mean, what is it? Fishyreview.com talks about that way to paint the bottom of your tank, the outside bottom of your tank with sandy-looking paint, sand-textured paint, so it looks like there's substrate on the bottom. And that looks better. I've seen those, and I always wanted to do that. Someday I will. And... so there are things you can do about that particular problem. The substrate can act as a kind of mechanical filter, in a way. I mean, of course, under gravel filters, or like Everclean Aqua filters, they use something under the substrate to help trap particles of detritus. But in general, just in a tank, if you have a substrate, you're going to get particles of detritus trapped there. If there's nothing under the substrate, it's going to trap in the substrate. And that's a type of mechanical filtration. Of course, it just sits there and decomposes and so on if you don't do something about it. But so, you know, that's
like
good.
Your carpet if you don't vacuum.
In a way, it's getting it out of the water column, which can be bad and it can be good, depending on what you do with it at that point, or what somebody or something does with it at that point. So... yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about that, too, as we go into plant growth, because, of course, one of the biggest advantages of having substrate in an aquarium is what you can do with plants. You have a much more versatile, or a potentially more versatile plant ecosystem, I guess. You can put a lot more species of plants in a tank in which you have a substrate than you can in tanks without a substrate. So I think after the break, that's what we'll attack.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aclaramax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it? We're back.
Okay, everybody, here we go. So we were talking about plant growth. There are a few plants, of course, you can grow without substrate. Actually, quite a few. A lot of floating plants. You can grow hornwort, for example, or anacharis, floating. You can grow java moss or anything like that without a gravel-type substrate. I mean, you can also just have them floating in the water, so they're not attached to anything. And you can even do that with java fern. I don't think it looks as good, and it's not as happy, maybe, but you can do it. And there are lots of other floating plants that you can do, frogbit and, you know, salvinia and, oh, you know.
The problem with floating plants is that they float around.
Yeah, and they're perhaps not as attractive. But there are a lot of plants that really don't do well without a substrate and will die. And if you want to grow a sword plant, for example, you need substrate somewhere. It doesn't have to be all over the bottom of a tank. It could be in a pot, but you need it. And personally, I think a planted tank looks better. At least, if they're pots, they're hidden in substrate. I don't know. I mean, I've grown plants in tanks with just pots planted there, but personally, I don't think it looks as good. And one thing about how that works, if you have the right kind of substrate, substrate with certain mineral nutrients in the substrate itself, then what happens in the substrate, it becomes, the environment down there becomes lower oxygen, and you've got all that detritus down there and everything, and the bacteria and other processes that are going on there, they tend to make that area kind of acid, which causes nutrients to be released from the substrate. And this doesn't work with like epoxy coated gravel, but if it's fluorite or, you know, laterite or something like that, then it'll release these nutrients, and it'll do it kind of slowly, and since the plant roots are down there, the plant roots are going to get to it and use it up.
They absorb it.
And they tend to take it before the algae in the water column gets to it. So that way, you can have controlled release of certain micronutrients that are good for your plants, but you're not really feeding algae like you would be if you're using waterborne nutrients. And so that can help keep a nice planted tank balanced. And that's a little bit difficult to do if you don't have a substrate. And even probably, I mean, you could do that in pots too, I suppose, but it might not work as well. The disadvantages of substrate. I'm sure there are other advantages, but that's what I can think about right now. The disadvantages are that substrate's harder to keep clean itself. I mean, you know, all that detritus, if you don't have substrate in there, it might sit there for a little while, but the filter's going to pick it up sooner. And if not, you can vacuum it more easily. So, definitely, without a substrate, it's easier to keep clean. So, a disadvantage is that it's harder to keep clean. And it can clog with detritus, and which is at best messy. And at worst, you can have a meltdown in your tank. You can have the thing go anoxic. You can have, or anaerobic, you can have hydrogen sulfide bubbling up from your substrate. And enough of that, and you can really quickly kill your fish. It's some pretty dangerous stuff. So, you have to be careful with that, not to get toxic pockets in your substrate. And if you're not careful, that can very easily happen. That's why we do gravel washing and things like that.
On a complete side note, Toxic Pockets is a good band name.
I guess it kind of is. Yeah. Or maybe an album name. I don't know. But what would the band be? Well, anyway, it could be either one. Okay, and then, of course, a disadvantage could be that it can decrease visibility of certain things. If you want to see things going on in the bottom of the tank, it can be harder to see if you've got substrate. Well, one thing that I didn't even mention, though, this is an advantage. I know I'm bouncing back, but what about this? Some fish need substrate to act out their normal behaviors, like certain fish, loaches and rays and other kinds of fish that bury themselves in the substrate. There's certain puffers that bury themselves under the substrate. They're ambush predators, and they just wait there with their eyes poking out of the sand, and you can't even see them, and all of a sudden, wham! They grab a fish or something.
They don't have anything to bury themselves in. They will be unhappy.
Yeah, so, you know, that's another advantage of substrate. So let's talk about some of the substrates we have had.
Tell us.
We could talk about the substrate none, but we kind of already covered that. But I do have that in the African clawed frog tank, Hedo's tank, because it's easier for him. And he could swallow particles of substrate and
have
problems.
So we have to be careful what we can put in there with him.
Yeah, so no substrate in there, but he's got furniture. Then there's the epoxy-coated or natural gravel, the normal stuff, run-of-the-mill gravel you see in pet stores. I really hate the neon stuff. It's terrible.
It's very neon.
Yeah,
it's
I don't
very unnatural
like it.
With fish.
Some people like it, but
maybe
I don't.
Maybe like for a kid's tank in their room.
Maybe. But not
like,
for me.
You know, when they have like the SpongeBob aquarium.
Yeah, some people.
Accessories or, you know.
Some people say it bugs fish to have the colors. I don't know if it does or not, but I don't like it. It bugs me.
They're very bright.
And, you know, that'll work for some plants actually, all right, but not the best. I don't know. Let's get past that. This is something that I've done. I've got aquatic soil before and put a couple, you know, an inch or two of that under a layer of gravel. I like that. It works pretty well, actually, because the roots get their thing going. There's not a whole lot of nutrients in there, so you have to use root tabs or something after a while.
Root tabs tell us what they're root tabs are.
They're fertilizer and time-release tablets that
you just
shove under the gravel with, like, tweezers near the roots of heavy-feeding plants. Or just spread them kind of randomly throughout your tank, or not so randomly throughout your tank, so the plants have something to do down there, something to eat. And, I like that. It's a pretty good system. And I've also noticed that when you disturb it, if you have to dig in it or something, since the aquatic soil particles are smaller, they kind of work back down and the gravel stays on top.
That's
so
nice.
So I like to put a layer of that aquatic soil on the bottom, and then put normal gravel on top. It works kind of nicely for a lot of plants. Even for plants like Anubias, where you don't want the rhizome to be buried, but they'll reach down with their roots and get nutrients and tend to do better in a system like that. Let's see. And then there's Fluorite. That's a brand name. I don't get any money from Fluorite or the company that produces it, which is Seachem. But I like it. It's one of those nutrient-rich substrates I was talking about. And you can mix it with gravel or put gravel on top of it as well. And it's messy to put in. It's kind of cloudy when you first put it in. You have to be careful. It's nice not to disturb it much. And there are ways to get around that, and there are a lot of them, and go look that up if you're interested in how to do that. But it's pretty successful at minimizing the mess. But if you're not careful, you can make a big cloudy mess with it. It's great for plants. I've loved it for that. It's not so good for digging fish or, you know, fish that are going to be bashing around in the gravel. It's got kind of sharp edges, which I don't think is the best for some fish with barbels. And fish that, like, charge into the substrate, like coolie loaches sometimes, that could be bad for them. But it's really great for growing nice plants. And then for really high pH, high alkalinity tanks, brackish tanks, saltwater tanks, there's things like aragonite sand and... this is sort of a side note, but aragonite sand tends to be a good buffer for all kinds of systems, as long as it's okay that they're high alkalinity, you know, systems with hard water, then it's okay. But there are quite a few companies now that are producing substrates that already have bacterial cultures in them, so you can kind of jump start your aquarium. Drop that substrate in and the bacterial culture is already there. And I've used that with saltwater aquariums. It's kind of nice. I haven't tried any of the freshwater ones that do that. But the saltwater ones seem to work for me. And then there's things like the moon sand, Tahitian moon sand, which
ooh,
is black
pretty.
And beautiful. It's really beautiful, but it's messy. Especially if you have substrate-dwelling fish that dig around, they'll kick up all sorts of detritus unless you really stay on top of vacuum it up. And even if you do, it's kind of hard to keep a hold of. So I would say if you're going to use that, don't put a whole lot of digging fish in the tank, because they'll tend to stir it up or stir up any detritus in the substrate. You're supposed to keep on top of that, but, you know, if you get a little bit behind and then you've got a big mess. And some people say that it might be too sharp for little fish with barbels like, you know, Corydoras pygmaeus or coolie loaches or something like that. I haven't noticed any particular problems necessarily with that, but I don't know. I've heard it could be bad. And Brian, in a Twitter tweet, mentioned that he doesn't like silica sand because even though it looks nice, it can cause damage to the impellers and so on in your filter, which is a great point to bring up. That's something you have to watch for as well. All right. And then, of course, different substrates. You can change the colors of different substrates to complement your fish. We tend to like... Which color is your favorite?
I like black.
I like black or really dark natural colors myself, too. The fish just tend to look better and the whole tank looks better.
I have seen some tanks with white substrate that looked really striking, but you just think... It'd be like having a white carpet. It'd be so hard to keep clean. Mm.
And it works okay for marine tanks to have a light color, but not so much for freshwater, I think. Okay.
Well, we saw that one once. It was kind of a funky, futuristic-looking tank. It had, like, these white, large mermaid tears in the bottom and steel wire whisks poked up like plants, and then a bunch of black moors.
Oh, that was funky.
And it looked kind of cool, but you just think goldfish and a white substrate, it's just going to be poop substrate all the time.
Well, of course, and especially with mermaid's tears. I mean, yeah. Those things are, I don't know what to say about them, except for maybe for using in a spawning tank, which I have done, because they work more or less like marbles to keep the fish off the eggs. But other than that, I wouldn't put one in my tank.
It's very impractical.
Yeah, and I don't think they look very good either.
I do tend to like the darker substrates.
Yeah.
I think it shows off the fish better usually.
Yeah. And Dave had another comment. He said that he purchased some Haplochromis SP44, which are also called, and you can say, thick skins is one of the common names they get. Sometimes they get these species numbers, and there are a lot of confusion. There is a lot of confusion about which fish are which species.
It's even hard to say.
Yes, because you might get species 44, or you might think it's something else. It might be sold as, I think there's one website that mentioned that it was often incorrectly sold as Haplochromis obliquidens, and so on. And who knows if it's actually one species or a species complex? That's really hard to tell with any of the Rift Lake cichlids, and this is a Rift Lake cichlid. It's a Victorian haplochromine, I believe. It's obviously a haplochromine, and I believe it's a Victorian one. He said that he...
It means it wears a corset.
Well, not exactly. It means it's from Lake Victoria.
I'm just bad today.
No, that's okay. From a home aquarium in his neighborhood, he bought some fry, and then they grew up, and they've produced an abundance of fry for him, and he has read that this species is virtually extinct in Lake Victoria and has only been kept around by aquarists. Now, I guess that's true of a lot of Lake Victorian species because of the Nile perch that was introduced. It's like a giant vacuum cleaner. It has sucked up all sorts of species in Lake Victoria, which is really sad. Anyway, and he asked if I knew if this is a popular species or fairly rare in home aquariums, and I don't know the answer to that. I haven't kept it myself. But I would like to put out the call to all of you. If you have kept it yourselves, or if you know of a source of it, or if you've seen it in your stores, or you are in touch with an aquarist who breeds it, then let us know. And we would like to kind of get an idea of how popular it is in aquariums or how rare or whatever.
We can answer his question.
Yeah, maybe we can answer his question with your help. He also says that he generally listens to our podcast while working in his fish room. Keep up the good work. So thank you, Dave, for joining us as a contributor.
We will certainly try.
And yeah, we will try to keep up the good work. We're glad you think it's good. and we'll keep working at any rate. And thank you to Dave and to Brian for joining us as contributors today. And we hope to hear from a lot of you in the future and from both of you again. In the meantime, happy fish keeping, folks!
Good night!
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629. Or email us at info@aquarimax.com.